it's not that you have to be uber confident in yourself, but learn how to manage your own fears and learn how to manage and work through any doubts you have about yourself and keep on trying. As Phoebe said, it's not that you're guaranteed success, but if you keep on moving and keep on shaking and iterating and finding creative solutions to your obstacles, you will succeed. Your success might look different, but you'll get there.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Phoebe and Mark are real estate developers with a passion for renovating historic buildings and improving property management. Their story is one of epic growth, going from owning a duplex to over 145 doors in just 5 years. Mark and Phoebe, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, the pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. Can one of you tell us in 90 seconds or less where you guys started, where you are now, and how you got there?
Oh, goodness.
Oh, yeah. I'll give it a shot. Well, I started as an occupational therapist. Mark's a musician by training. And so we were working our 9 to 5, so to speak. Of course, a musician is never 9 to 5. But I was working 9 to 5, and we were ready to start a family, actually, looking at the mortgage payment and the bills, and decided that we didn't want to trade our time for money anymore. So we started buying real estate.
Wow.
Flex and lived in half and rented out the other, and just got a taste of what it was like to have someone else pay some of our bills. So we kind of liked it, decided we would continue on down that path.
Oh man, that's fantastic. You guys are in some really fun things right now. Love to take some time to jump into, but renovating historic buildings and improving property management. I mean, that's a really niche skill set, especially the historic, or as we call it, the hysterical society, dealing with them. that's a unique skill set. How'd you get into that?
Well, I think mostly by accident, like most of the good things we do, it just kind of happens. Well, initially we were buying historic properties because they were cheap and good value. Like it doesn't, like if you're buying a duplex, if it's historic, it's just going to be a lot, if it needs work, it's going to be a lot cheaper because no one wants to be biting off knob and tube wiring. No one wants to be dealing with plaster and lathe. So they're just a lot cheaper. And when we started our business, when we sold our single family and we wanted to have passive income, the first property we bought was a foreclosed duplex, and it was $100,000. And, you know, after renovating it, we lived downstairs, upstairs pays the mortgage. And at that purchase price, upstairs does pay the mortgage because it's a tiny mortgage.
Right. That's interesting. How did you guys, I guess, get further into historic renovations? Because that's, it's a pretty cool niche.
Well, we bought a property. Actually, a guy kind of chased us down and said, "Hey, will you buy my building? I think you guys could renovate this and do a good job at it." And we said, "All right, yeah, sure." So we went ahead with that. And the vision with that building was to transform it into a boutique hotel. And the first floor of the building had been a bunch of different businesses over the years, but maybe vacant for about 10 years. But the interesting part was the upper floors. It's a four-story building. So second, third, and fourth floors had been vacant since the 60s.
Wow.
And so kind of like a time capsule up there, just really cool old historic trim and doors with transoms and all that cool stuff. And we thought, yeah, we can make a boutique hotel out of this and preserve a lot of the historic frame. What do they call it? Fabric, I guess, is what the historic people like to talk about. And so we got into that thinking we could benefit from using the tax credits. And the more we dug, the more we learned. Still a learning curve, of course, but the philosophy of the historic tax credits kind of aligned with our vision for the project. And I think that's really why we decided to go that route.
How did you figure out about historic tax credits? And then if you don't mind explaining what those are.
How do we figure them out? Oh, goodness. I don't even know.
Well, I guess we just talk around the town. Ultimately, the guy that sold us the building had gotten the building listed on the historic register for historic places. And so he kind of turned us onto that. And he also recommended a consultant that could help us with the tax credits. So the concept behind it is basically, as long as you follow their criteria, which are very stringent, in your renovation, then you get tax credits, whether it's federal or state tax credits. The state tax credits, you can pretty easily sell off and get cash back into your pocket after the project's done. The federal tax credits are a little trickier in that regard. You would need to have joint ownership in order for someone else to be able to use the tax credits. So unless you have a partner in the deal, or if you want to take, sometimes like a lender will somehow get their name on the deed in some passive way in order to benefit from the tax credits. And you, of course, they compensate you to use those credits.
What's the breakdown between state and federal tax credits? And then when you get those credits, you get them at the end of the deal?
Right. I think state is 25% of qualified expenses, which will be a lot of the expenses of the property renovation. It won't cover things like furniture or certain things, but elevator, just a lot of the general construction costs you're going to have will be qualified expenses. So state is 25% and federal is 20%. State you can sell, as Phoebe said, there are companies that will you can syndicate the credits. Larger companies will typically buy them, I think, maybe 90 cents on the dollar. So once you have your agreement struck, that's just goes into your bank account, I guess, not having done it. But that's my hope, at least. And then, when do you get it? You have to, once the property is placed in service, they have to go through the review process. So my understanding is about maybe 6 months after you launch the building or the whatever it is, then, it's done. All the legal stuff is finalized. And then, yeah.
And you mentioned a consultant that helped you get those credits initially. Will this consultant kind of be on board and help you get all the way through the disposition of those tax credits?
Yeah, I connected with her in the beginning and she helped us submit our application, which again, very technical, very detailed. And without a consultant, I would be really hesitant to try because I think you'd probably make a lot of mistakes and maybe not get the credits in the end. So it'd be, I think that's pretty risky to try that for your first deal. The state tax credit application is a lot more simple, so you could probably try that if you wanted to try it on your own. But our consultant is awesome, and she knows all sorts of stuff about the history of the building and the area and things like that, and really dug down into what was there originally. One of the biggest things that they care about is the windows, and you have to have like the same dimensions to within a quarter inch on like where the two sashes meet and around the, I mean, it's very, very picky.
Wow. That's intense. So let's talk a little bit about, what are your total expenses do you think will be on that project? And then how many dollars in tax credits do you hope to then generate, when you get them all back in?
I think the property is about $2 million all in. And then the tax credits, maybe $400,000, something like that.
Okay.
Those are kind of our estimates.
Okay. Yeah, once you take out things that are unqualified expenses and the cost of just legal assistance and consultants and things like that.
Right. So the total project is $2 million. But what about your renovation expenses? What do you expect that will be? Is that $2 million in renovation expenses?
That's what I said. Yeah.
I gotcha. Okay. So you're hoping, like you said early on, you told me this number and I'm just making sure I'm understanding. I'm a slow learner, but that about 25% of your total renovation expenses will get reimbursed by tax credits.
Yeah. It's more, it's 25 for state, 20 for federal, but.
So 45% total.
Of the qualified. So of the 2 million that we might spend to develop the hotel, maybe only 1.5 of that is qualified. Okay. So then it would be the 20 and the 25% of that 1.5.
Got it.
So that's kind of how we look at it.
Right. Understood. Okay, cool. That's fantastic. Thanks for taking the time to get into the nuance of that, because it's not something we get a lot of chance to talk about, especially with boutique hotels. Let's talk a little bit about the management side of that. I mean, that's a brand new operating business. Are you guys going to do this as like a short-term rental hotel, or is it going to be an actual hotel? What's the plan?
I think it'll be a little bit of a blend of both. I mean, we're kind of setting up as a more traditional hotel, but I'm sure we'll market to the short-term rental marketplace as well. So it'll be a little bit of both. We're not planning to do all the traditional hotel amenities. Like, we're not going to offer breakfast and things like that, but we have put on the first floor of the building a couple of commercial spaces. And so we're hoping that one's going to be like a breakfast and lunch kind of area, maybe cafe, and one will be an evening hangout spot. Maybe wine bar or whiskey bar or something along those lines.
Gotcha. That's interesting. What have you done to educate yourselves on the ownership and management of a hotel?
Oh, goodness. You sound like the bank. We've done.
Right, we're going to hit stop here. I'm going to leave because I've never. That hurt, man.
That wasn't offensive. We work with a wonderful bank. So that was actually aimed as a compliment.
Oh, man. No, I'm just kidding.
That's a good question. We've owned and operated a couple of short-term rental, like Airbnb apartments before. And we were just astonished at how much demand we had.
Yeah.
So in terms of opera, we mostly think of it like this hotel is going to be more like an Airbnb. I mean, it will be out there on the hotel sites on Wikipedia, not Wikipedia, but Expedia and all these other places. It'll be out there, but we think of it more as not so much what people think of as a hotel, corporate, you know, not like that at all. It's more just a larger amount of Airbnbs that would be kind of grouped together.
Right.
So I'm not to say that we really are experts at all about this. It's mostly, I think, in the town where it's in central Kansas, a town called Hutchinson, which is where all of our properties are. There's a big need for, you know, a hotel. It's downtown. There really aren't any nice hotels downtown. So it's kind of like, it's not that we're experts in developing hotels. It's that we felt we found a great building and a great town where it's a fit. So we'll just tool up and figure it out as we go.
Sure.
Yeah. And we're planning, I mean, so it got 23 rooms. So it's kind of definitely on the small side for a hotel, but on the large side for Airbnb.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a manager to do the actual work of running the hotel for us as well.
Gotcha. That's really intriguing. No, I love that. I'm sorry. I sounded like the bank, but it's one of those things that as you see people launching into new ventures, there are things that give them the confidence to say, hey, I can succeed at that, right? It's not like you didn't just wake up one day and you're like, yeah, I think I'm gonna build or renovate a hotel. Like there were some things that led up to the confidence I can have success in this. So I guess that was the question I was really trying to ask. So
no, it's a great question.
I mean, that's always our story is, well, we owned a single family and then we sold it and bought a duplex. We'd never done a duplex before, you know, so
it was striking distance. Yeah. So I think the same thing is we tend to be higher on the risk side. We're willing to take a risk and just try it out because what do you have to lose?
True.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic. What else fun are you guys working on right now on the development side? Or is this the one that's kind of the front and center project?
No, in that town where we're doing the boutique hotel, Hutchinson, Kansas, we own a couple of other larger properties. One's a 12-story tower and then a 6-story tower as well. Those ones we purchased first about a year and a half ago. So we've done a lot of work renovating apartments and commercial spaces in those buildings. Mm. And that continues to this day. I mean, they're kind of different. They're different beasts, right, from the boutique hotel. But the boutique hotel is more like the new thing for us where we're learning a lot. But the apartments and the commercial spaces, we're a little bit more familiar with that. Although a 12-story tower, we were not familiar with at all until we had to become familiar with it.
That's absolutely intriguing. What are some things you wish you knew that you know now before you bought that 12-story tower?
Elevators. Oh my gosh. So we moved to Kansas City from the East Coast, and our largest property on the East Coast was a 6-unit apartment building, wood frame house, essentially. And so when we bought concrete block, 12-story tower with elevators, it was the elevators in my mind were one of the steepest learning curves. And we're still learning on that front. The companies provide terrible service, it seems. Mm. And they charge you your left arm for that. And it's still a lot of negotiating and trying to wrangle them to get decent service for a reasonable price.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that's one of the things I would have thought of out of the gate, you know, what elevator repairs and maintenance. I mean, because those are things no one wants to get stuck in. Absolutely intriguing. If, you know, if our listeners want to scale up their portfolio, you know, they say, hey, you know, we're in the duplex. We want to do like what Mark and Phoebe have done and just go out there and grow into bigger asset classes. What are some things you would tell them?
Wow, I think it's a great idea. I mean, I don't think everyone wants to do that. But if you want to do that, I mean, I think... Oh, goodness, I don't even know. How did we do it?
You got to go for it. I mean, you just have to try. So when we went to buy Plaza Towers, which is our first big building, Mark knocked on the door of every bank in town, you know, opened up the phone book and called down all of them. And only one would even entertain the idea, really. So I think you just got to kind of go for it and just keep pushing and pushing until a door opens. It's not going to be handed to you on a platter. But if you try for it, it's not rocket science either, you know?
Yeah, that's what we discovered is, and we're still discovering that to this day, because every time we've done, every time pretty much where we go for a new property, it's a new size of property for us. Like the 12-story tower, the thing we owned before that was a 6-unit. This is 75. So it's like, well, the issue you have is if you go to a bank, they're going to say, well, show us your track record with 75-unit buildings. And you'll be like, don't have one. I did really well with this other one. It's not that you have to be uber confident in yourself, but learn how to manage your own fears and learn how to manage and work through any doubts you have about yourself and keep on trying. As Phoebe said, it's not that you're guaranteed success, but if you keep on moving and keep on shaking and iterating and finding creative solutions to your obstacles, you will succeed. Your success might look different, but you'll get there.
How did you ultimately convince the bank to give you guys the loan on that property?
What a great question. We should put you on the phone with the bank. I think probably what it was, you want to speak to that?
No, you. That's Mark's side of the business. I do more the development once we own the properties.
So. Yeah, I think I sat with her and I must have just talked to her about our vision for how we do our company and our vision for developing properties in the downtown of Hutchinson, Kansas, which is where our properties are. And my guess is this bank is kind of a local bank. They also have that vision. Hmm. They also financed the previous owner of the building. So they had a relationship with the previous owner. So they knew the building. They had some idea of the track record. And I think it just kind of worked out. I mean, we had what we needed for the down payment. Their loan product worked. So that's a great question. I wonder that myself sometimes, you know. I think I might have even asked our banker at one point, you know, why did you come with us?
It's a great problem to have when the bank says yes. So there's absolutely no complaints. Talk to me a little bit about working together. What's been a way, because you mentioned that, Phoebe, you said, hey, you know, that's Mark's kind of side of the business. So what's a way that you two have found to work together without causing friction?
Well, I guess we try to play to our strengths. So in the beginning, you really just get down and dirty and all hands on deck. We were when we first bought our first duplex, we were both doing the actual renovation work. Wow. And then as we've grown a little bit, Mark's got a nice accent. So he's good at schmoozing, interfacing partner with investors as well. So he talks to investors and gets funding together and things like that. He likes to think about the big picture. And I really am good at logistics and getting down to the details. So I do the project management side and help develop the properties once we own them. So that's kind of how it works for us.
Gotcha. There is friction. There's not incredible amounts of friction that destroy our business. But yeah, generally it works really well.
Right. No, that's fantastic. I love that. Yeah, figuring out what your strengths are and then just playing to those. That's a common area of, like I said, friction for a lot of people, especially getting started. It's like, wait, hey, we're all doing the same thing and quit doing what I'm doing. I'm trying to do what you're doing. So quit doing what it's just, yeah. That's
right.
Fantastic. I love how you guys have figured that out. That's fantastic. Let's jump here into the final four questions. The first one is this. What is one tool or resource you find you can't live without? Think digital, think software, something along those lines.
Oh, wow. Asana, we use project management, like task project management software called Asana, and we use that to kind of set our priorities, set to do things into lists and things like that. So we use Asana for that.
Mm, got it.
QuickBooks is the first thing that came to mind for me because I do the numbers side of our business too. Yeah,
that's absolutely imperative. Good for you. That's a skill set I do not have. So thank you for doing that in your own business. That's fantastic. Question number two is, when it comes to investing in real estate, what's one mistake you can help our listeners avoid and how would you avoid it?
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. The number one thing that I think of when I think of mistakes is people not trying for things. A lot of times I hear people talk or they listen to a lot of podcasts and they're always like learning and thinking about it, but then they don't actually go ahead and do it. I'm like, you learn by doing. And of course you make mistakes. We have this concept I like to call learning money, where, you know, you make mistakes, something costs you more than it should have, or you hire a contractor and you get stiffed or whatever happens. And you think, all right, that was learning money. I would have paid if I was going to get a college degree in property development, I would have paid for a class and I'm just going to count that as a class and learn from it and move on. But I think really you got to go for it. So
I love that learning money. Yeah. You're going to pay for your education one way or another. So
yeah,
might as well
make money while you're paying too.
Right. Absolutely love that. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
We have lots of apartments in our two apartment buildings where they were just completely beat to hell. Really bad tenants, nasty carpets, bugs, roaches, feces, urine.
All the stuff we don't want.
Yeah. Oh, well, we want it because we want to buy those properties, but we don't want it to stay that way. So we work with a great construction company and a great property management company, and they have their guys working through it. And one by one, you know, turning these apartments around, presenting them back to market at good, affordable rates, good tenants. We think that's a pretty profound impact on the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Very, very cool. Mark and Phoebe, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you and your company, what is the best way to do that?
We have a website. It's called leverreproperties.com, L-E-V-A-R-E properties.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram.
Fantastic. We will make sure we put those links there in the show notes. Mark and Phoebe, thank you for your time today. It was a pleasure to get to know you.
You too, fella. Thank you.
Take care.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.